This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With me is poet Kika Aviles. Here's Kika.
Hello, how you doing? And I will open with a poem that is very dear to me. And it's called Let the Poets Run the Country. I don't know about you, but I say let the poets run the country. We'll be better off with books and pens instead of the misery of weapons. I say let the poets run the country. They'll give out poetic justice and listen to those of us who want to speak. Thinking will be declared the national language. Birds will be allowed to share their wisdom. Cabinet meetings will have new agendas. The truth in Neruda will be discussed. There will be policy analysis on important matters such as love and dignity. I don't know about you, but I say let the poets run the country. We'll have leaders who speak from the heart, people who will not take into account the money of thieves and liars. We will have a country filled with rhymes and justice if for once we let the poets run the country.
That is the voice of Kika Aviles. He's a poet, performer, and his work, as we hear, addresses social issues. Native of El Salvador, graduated from the Duke Ellington School for the Arts, and he's been writing and performing in the U.S. over 20 years in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, Santa Fe, throughout the country. Kika, your journey is a tribute to making a life for poetry, because you have taken no prisoners. You have not said, I'm going to do this and poetry on the side. You are a practitioner in the true sense of the word. Would you say that's a good description?
I would say it's a fair description, yes.
What is your story? When did you come to this country?
I came here when I was 15 years old in 1980, right at the height of the Civil War in El Salvador, as Ronald Reagan was coming into office. And I'd been writing poetry since I was probably 12. And I just basically started writing cheesy love poems to try to impress girls. But the political situation and being exposed to more social conscious poetry when I came here and getting involved in the political movement to stop the U.S. Meddling and intervention in our conflict in El Salvador led me to explore other things and to kind of try to begin to use my voice, I would say, in a more political manner. And there was this political awakening in me as a teenager. And, you know, I was only 15. And then when I went to Duke Ellington School of the Arts for high school, I went into the theater department and realized that there's really not that many roles for Latinos in much of the, you know, plays in traditional theater. So I came to the conclusion that if I wanted to go into this performance and writing thing, that I needed to develop my own voice, that I needed to start writing my own scripts. And that's kind of how things got started for me.
And if we want to change the world, we have to invent it first.
Exactly.
The way we want it to be. And so that's what you've been doing. And I see your work. If you lined up all of your poetry end to end across the room, it's really one long song. So let us hear another. Kika Aviles.
Okay. Let's do something that I would say is a tribute to all immigrants. And it's called the Immigrant Museum. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, language mishaps, dance lessons for people with no rhythm, fake documents, foreign heroes, military medals, gypsies and comadres, mafiosos and compadres. The museum halls offer Polish poetry, German doubts, Mexican colors, Negro insight and essays, Irish midwives. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, historic oil drum barrels from the Persian Gulf, replicas of holding cells for aliens from the tropics, a sequential installation on the life of the nanny, morning tasks, washing, drying, folding, ironing, dinner prep, and dinner. The first bilingual robot, confusing translating manuals, primitive art for Western tourists. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, Russian vodka, bilingual answering machines, herbal potions, Jesus paintings, Chinese noodles, Vietnamese sandals. The first dream to enter Ellis Islands that wasn't fulfilled. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, jubilation, song and prayer, circumcision and baptism, wedding dresses, hard hats, baby bottles, joy dancing in colors, dreams posing as day laborers, hyphens, fear, orgasms, prayer, apprehension, ambivalence. Yes, at the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, there are accents, there are accents.
We're at the Library of Congress with Kika Aviles, and I would say that listening to your work, it is like seeing a collage, so that not only do you write with your lyrical ability, but you're building all the time. It's like building images and juxtaposing artifacts. Are you aware of that? Is that on purpose?
I don't know that I'm aware of it. I think the part of the deal with me is that I've never really written thinking of a reader. I've always wrote my pieces thinking of a listening audience. Mm. I come from, you know, a tradition of performance, and really the bulk of my work, the more and more that I've, you know, thought about it and the more and more that I've looked at it, and it hasn't been until the last 5 years that I've sat down with, you know, my body of work from over the last 20 years, and I come to realize that I would say that 80% of all of my writing has been written with the thought of an audience, not with the thought of somebody holding a piece of paper and reading the lines. So that I think that there is perhaps that approach to the writing, that I'm thinking about delivery and not necessarily about literary structure.
It works both ways, lucky for you.
Well, I hope
you managed. But it's very visual as well. And the listing of things, I think, gives it a lot of power. It gains a kind of a litany, or gains momentum. And that's one thing about you. You have a lot of power and passion in your work. Would you say that was the oral tradition a Latin tradition?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I grew up with my grandmother, and I grew up, you know, as a kid, we used to listen to radio soap operas. And there was only one television set in the town, and you had to pay 5 cents to go and watch Tarzan and, you know, kind of like special programs. And then we were the second family to get a TV. But radio played a big role. And then also storytelling, you know. As kids, we sat around with the older folks who told tales, who told scary stories, and you know, that's kind of, and then coming from a theater background, you know, you kind of have to paint, you know, with words. So, you know, that's kind of the tradition that I come from.
Kika Aviles has been featured on NPR's Latino USA and on subway posters throughout Washington's Metro Muse. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. He's written and performed 5 one-man shows, and we're going to hear about that. That interests me very much, and that's what he is known for internationally, I believe. Has a book out called The Immigrant Museum, and we heard the title piece from that. And another one, I think, is stacked on his lap to the tune of about 200 pages ready to go, it looks like. You write every day?
No, I don't. I have spells. I can go for a year and a half without writing, not writing seriously. My process is very, I don't know if it's unique, but I just jot down thoughts, sometimes lines, sometimes words. Sometimes I'm driving or walking or riding the train, and a thought comes in, and I just jot it down. And when I'm ready to write, I go back to all my handwritten notebooks. I type all my thoughts and ideas into a computer, and then I print them, then I cut them with scissors, I put them on the wall, and then I begin to look for connections.
I love it.
And then sometimes a line will end up being a poem, you know, a couple of lines will end up being a monologue. So I'm not a purist in that sense.
No, that is excellent advice. That is a wonderful thing to tell young people who are learning.
I come to the conclusion that nothing is disconnected from anything.
Exactly.
So that a thought that you had perhaps 2 years ago can be very well connected to an image that you just wrote down today.
And it's all from you.
Exactly.
So it's all connected. You're the source. And the organization is the trick. So I like what you say about cutting them up and putting them all so you can see them all at once. I actually have color-coded, like all the green with a crayon that might be somewhat alike, and the pink. So I love that fragmentation. See, we have that Latin blood.
Yeah.
Kika Aviles, I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress, and we are glad. Let's hear another.
Okay, this one, I always say that ain't nobody gonna sing our song, so we might as well sing our own. And this one is a poem of praise to all of those who are bilingual. And it's called My Tongue is Divided into Two. My tongue is divided into two by virtue, coincidence, or heaven. Words jumping out of my mouth, stepping on each other, enjoying being a voice for the message, expecting conclusions. My tongue is divided into two, into heavy accent bits of confusion, into miracles and accidents, saying things that hurt the heart, drowning in a language that lives, jumps, translates. My tongue is divided by nature, by our crazy desire to triumph and conquer. This tongue is cut up into equal pieces. One wants to curse and sing out loud. The other one simply wants to ask for water. My tongue is divided into two. One side likes to party. The other one takes refuge in praying. Tongue, English of the funny sounds. Tongue, funny sounds in English. Tongue, sounds funny in English. Tongue, in funny English sounds. My tongue sometimes acts like two, and it goes crazy, not knowing which side should be speaking, which side translating. My tongue is divided into two. A border patrol runs through the middle, frisking words, asking for proper identification, checking for pronunciation. My tongue is divided into two. My tongue is divided into two. I like my tongue. It says what feels right. I like my tongue. It says what feels right.
That should be your signature poem. I love the way you punch certain consonants as you say that, because you are a performer. And I was wondering how it sounded in your own language, if you would punch the same sounds. Do you think you read it the same?
I don't know, because actually this is perhaps... See, that's the issue, is that something has happened. I mean, I started writing in Spanish because that's my first language. But as I grew older, and I guess part of it was the need to feel that my voice was not speaking to the converted, I started writing in English, and that is the language in which I write. So there's only a few poems, and it's funny because when people in the Spanish-speaking community call me, they ask me to do stuff in Spanish, and I say, well, I only have a few poems, which is the truth, you know, in Spanish. And this one poem, My Tongue is Divided into Two, is one of the few that I've managed to translate. And it's kind of tricky because...
Translating it from English to Spanish.
To Spanish.
That's odd.
Exactly. So it's you know, I call it nostalgia in reverse. And I don't...
Do you want to do that, though, a little bit more?
I guess. I think as I grow older, you know, I think that there's a little bit more of a desire to perhaps... be able to bring my work to Latin America, you know. And part of the issue is, I see, when we first came here, we were a community of immigrants who did not speak the language, and it made a lot of sense to write in Spanish and to speak in Spanish to that community. But my work actually has been, you know, part of, I guess, the reason of my work has been to give a voice to the voiceless, to audiences that perhaps don't have much information. We tend to be in the English-speaking audience. And also there's been the whole aspect of you know, our community here in Washington D.C., especially the Salvadoran community, doesn't have a tradition of going to performances. And like I said again, I write for performance, so my stuff gets heard at theaters. And our folks, you know, they work two jobs, and the weekend they want to go to a restaurant, they want to go to a club, you know, to dance their own music, and you know, and kind of be in touch with their culture. But it's usually pop culture. And I don't blame them for that. You know, they're very hardworking folks. So the dissemination of my work has primarily taken place in venues that are primarily attended by Americans.
That's interesting. Yeah, but you're very entertaining. So I think you could do it on any stage. And I've known you for a few years, and I kind of see you coming full circle, so that you did start as a youngster writing in Spanish. You reach now another population in English, but I can almost see you moving full circle to a bilingual text, perhaps. It's just a possibility.
I do bilingual stuff, and you know, and one of the things that I've done, you know, I guess more of, and I'm finding that is landing very well with certain audiences. And I mean, and my point I was trying to make is that we're no longer that community of recently arrived immigrants that we, for the first time in our history in the area, Central Americans, we have a generation of kids that are American, so that they speak Spanish at home, and a lot of them speak it really bad, and their first language is English, so that there is this whole Spanglish generation, you know, people that can't speak full sentences sometimes in neither language, so that resort to a kind of hybrid kind of language. And I, you know, I play with that every now and then in my writing.
Kika Aviles. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress. We're going to hear some more of his work.
I'm going to do this piece, and this is a tribute to being Latin, which I didn't know I was a Latin until I came to the United States. That word did not exist in my vocabulary. I was a Salvadorian, so when I first came here, people kept talking about going to La Latina, and La Latina was the Latino store, and kept talking about Los Latinos. And I kept asking my brother and my sister, who are Los Latinos? And they said, we. And I said, what do you mean, we? And so there is this introduction to this term, Latino, that never existed in my vocabulary. So this one's called Latinhood. What does it feel like inside? What color is this Latinhood? How does it do what it does? What is it that makes it happen in the way that it happens? Volatile, inquisitional, monolingual, with a yellow flower stuck in its braided hair. What language does it like to speak? Cachiquel, Spanish, Nahuatl, Creole, or English? Does he know the rules to civilized behavior, or does he tend to go at your throat when feeling threatened and cheated? What color is this Latinhood of mine? Is it black Latin, brown Latin, Indio Latin, white Latin, Latin Latin, Italian Latin via Buenos Aires, Latin with a tinge of whiteness, mestizo Latin with Korean roots? Is it straight A's, honor roll, Hall of Fame, welfare recipient, registered to vote, legal or illegal? Is it urinating Latin, PhD Latin, regular Latin, or Latin supreme? Is it Mexican Latin, Salvatruco Latin, Patagonia Latin, Latin with an American passport? What does it feel like inside? What does it feel like inside? Oh my God! Could it be that you feel flowery, hot and spicy, Rio Grande, Bolivian Lake, FM radio in a Caracas afternoon, Colombian capital full of parades? How do you know that you're a Latin, that you're not some Russian imposter with a Peruvian accent? What the hell is this all about? Is it about yellow rice, bean soup recipes, coca plants, Garcia Marquez, tourism, bananas, inflation? Is it about being weird, different, borracho, poetic, Hispanic American with the sounds of fiestas patronales? What color did you get yours? Is it blue Chilean, yellow Asunción, burgundy of St. Croix, purple San Jose? Who are you in this crazy web of Latins? Are you a Jimenez, an Escobar, a Maravilla, a Scapini, a Molina, a well of broken wishes? Who are you? Did I meet your mustache somewhere else? Are we related? Is it true what they're saying? That this whole thing is the simple ability to swallow the world at birth, keeping it, learning to chew at it, letting it grow inside.
You're going to want to know how to reach him, Kika Aviles. So I'm going to tell you that if you have a computer and go to www.solysoul.com, you'll track him down, and we'll do that again. You know, Kika, poetry makes things so clear. You have just made everything so clear. Instead of giving a political treatise, coming from the inside out, not knowing what the word Latin meant, that is a wonderful poem.
Thank you.
That is amazing. When people say poetry makes things difficult, quite the opposite.
Yeah, I find that out. It's helped me clarify my own self.
Yep. Clarity out of chaos. That's why we do it. Let's hear another.
Okay. This one is it's called Getting By. And I grew up in a very mixed community, Mount Pleasant, Adams Morgan, Columbia Heights. This is three sections of Washington, D.C. that are perhaps, some people say, the most culturally diverse section. I say the most culturally saturated, because there's a lot of tension also that comes with all of us from different ethnicities, nationalities, colors, living together. And there's a lot of pain and beauty in all of it. So this is, I was written just by looking at people going by on Mount Pleasant Street, and it's called Getting By. Yes, I know the baby child, drooling, crying, still not knowing the colors of rays. The woman of the sunken eyes adorning the ghetto landscape at 5 a.m. The drunken dream of many. That tender, nightly hissing sound of many languages. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the sexy, proud, and chunky mother pushing life on a stroller, walking tall, thinking good. The twin stick-up boys, hazel eyes, matching guns. The pot dealer on a wheelchair, no legs, one arm. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the lawyer of the lily white wingtips, fresh flowers in one hand, bottle of wine and luscious thoughts in the other. The poetic drug boys with the Remy Martin bottle, the fronting, the tears. The old lady that feeds the pigeons daily, talking with them, singing. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the happy mistress, doing her hair, shopping for steak, engulfing perfume. The pathetic retired magician, faking old tricks, dying of sadness, hiding behind sequins and glitter. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the reluctant Anglo smile, shedding its skin and guilt, feeling Western and professional. The Afro-strut in anger, eating greens, walking jazz, shooting crap, dying fast. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the howl, the rotten dirty laughter, the playful titty, the cunning whisper, the belching horse, the wet lips of kissing. Yes, I know them all, I know them well. Getting by, getting by.
From the book, The Immigrant Museum. And that is still available. People would want to know that. And there's another book coming up. And let's hear a new one from a yet unpublished book. Maybe next year when we bring you back, it will be between covers.
I hope so. Again, I write a lot about the experience of being an immigrant. And this one is, it's about being in limbo. A lot of folks are given these temporary permits. And this one's called Status Immigranti. You go to the market, you buy everything, canned soup, toothpaste, candles to speak with God, beauty products that beautify your sadness. You make it on time to an indecisive encounter with your lover. You cry with her. You touch her skin. You kiss. You scream inside. You hide your sadness and your sorrow inside your shadow. You choose your garments, your clothes, the colors that will speak for you today. As you tie your shoes, you doubt your direction. You ask yourself if your steps are solid, certain steps. If this chosen street leads to good encounters, to dreams full of foamy waves and oceans. You are the guest at a baptism. In the middle of the party, you hold a child. You make her cry. You dance to ignore the baby tears. You say goodbye. Your shadow holds you by the hand. It quickly walks away and helps you disappear. You walk down the street looking down and finding coins. You hear the multiple translations of old stories. You regulate your accent as you walk along. You stop to look at the kindness of an ambulance picking up blood and wounds. You buy ice cream on a stick. You eat it sitting down on the steps of a church. The siren, the blood, the wounds fade away. You get your mail, official correspondence, approaching permit expiration. You worry, time goes by. You show up at the appointment. They give you a new stamp and a new date. You pay the fee required for the validation of your existence. You buy some new music. You listen to it as you iron your pants and your shirt. You sing the lyrics. You think of somebody special. You remember. You wish to return to the past. You feel things you felt before. Your shadow reappears. You buy a plant. You take it home. You talk to it. You give it a place in your days. You offer it water, light, birds, a place close to the freedom of your windows. You visit your mother. Before entering, you hide your shadow in the garden. You smile. You tell her how you're doing. You kiss her, hiding things from her, keeping your secrets, secretly wrapping them in the safety of your soul. Because it's better this way. Because it's better this way. Because it's better this way.
The voice of Kika Aviles, our poet. We're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're back with Kika Aviles, our poet. And one thing he is well known for, and I've seen him in action, is performing the one-man show. There is nothing harder in this world than to stand up and to keep the audience, because you have to provide the expansion, the contraction, the compression. How do you approach the one-man show?
Well, I think... For me, it's, there's got to be, you know, a really strong desire I think that that's the only aspect of my work where a theme has to emerge first. And it's funny because usually I start with a title. You know, my first one-man show was Latinhood, you know, where I explored what it means to be a Latino in the United States. And I play... four different characters. I play my mom, I played a kid that hates being Latino, I played a Colombian teacher who ends up being a waiter here in the United States, and I played an insane man, Loco Culebra. My second show was Chaos Standing, and it was a look at the dynamics of race relations in the communities where I grew up. The last one was Caminata, which means long walk in Spanish. And there I approach kind of like the universal voice of immigrants from different parts of the world. And in that show, there were seven characters from from Africa, from Russia, from El Salvador, from Korea, people from all different walks of life. And that's kind of been also my path, is that I've refused to remain just a Latino poet, a Latino performer, a Latino writer. I do feel that our experience, especially here in this country, that is perhaps the only country in the world that has the whole world living in it, our experiences is permeated by all the other experiences, and that sometimes we're taught or we're encouraged to box ourselves into being Black or being Latino or being white, being young, being adult, being an elderly person, and I refuse to allow my experience to be limited by those boxes, because I think that the beauty and the joy of living in this country is experiencing and rubbing elbows with all those other experiences. That's what makes it a unique place. So that's how I approach my work, and it's usually a theme that drives it, you know. And then sometimes the monologues come first, sometimes the poems come first, and sometimes the poetry guides the monologues, and then other times it's the other way around.
But it is always driven by character.
Yes.
When you develop that character, and we can identify with that character, everything else comes out of that. And I'd love it if you had a sample of that.
Okay. This is from a character. It's called Loco Culebra, Crazy Snake, who is this insane person that does not know where he's from. And claims, I mean, in terms of a country, he knows he's Latino, he knows he's bilingual, and he claims that he has the ability to go back and forth from earth and heaven, and he is buddies with God. And he has kind of, is a self-appointed representative from heavens to earth. He claims to be the first bilingual superhero. He claims that he teaches God Spanglish, that they play cards, that he has seen Winston Churchill up in heaven. And, you know, so he's insane. And this is his poem. I remember the day I went crazy. I knew it was coming. I had become disillusioned with life, the way it had been handed to me, roughly, with no gentleness or tact. Somehow, God must have decided that it was time for change, so he picked me. I remember the day, the morning, everything came to me all at once. A big explosion, insanity, a loud sound in my head. I felt the universe overtaking my body. Images of unpleasant people and things. Tax collectors running after me with bilingual tax forms. Clint Eastwood dubbed into Spanish, Te voy a matar. The Brady Bunch moving into my apartment, eternal confusion, the clouds, angels with long trumpets, the immaculate truth. There was God, playing cards with Marx and Churchill. Some saints planning a birthday party for Adam and Eve. A group of clowns discussing their past. The Virgin of Guadalupe translating godly messages for all Spanish-speaking believers. I don't know how long it lasted, but I know I was there, and I felt happy. Because God picked me, and we spoke for hours in Spanglish. And he said things like, Dame un brequecito, la troca, la barra, el mapo. Then I saw the earth again, and I knew he had sent me back with a mission. I couldn't speak for a while. My tongue did not understand life. It was torn between languages. When I first regained the ability to speak, I was speaking Quechua for no reason, but it felt good. Then I remember Spanish and forgot Quechua. Then I remember English and forgot Spanish. Now I'm in between, trying to remember all of them and separate them, trying to speak to life in some kind of way, to make peace, to shake hands. Yes, I remember the day I went crazy. I remember it clearly. Like daylight or the power of dreaming. And that's all I remember, just the day. And it's okay by me, not having a name, a country, or an age, because I can look at the world through different eyes at any moment and laugh if I want to, and talk to God and tell stories
stories to the squirrels and not have to be a liar or dishonest like this world in which I live, this world that insists on studying this insanity of mine. And I tell them, they should study themselves, the lines in their hands, their screams, the way they choose to make mistakes, not me, because that, what they have in their hands, what they live, is the real insanity.
Kike Aviles giving us a piece of his one-man performance, and when he goes on stage, he moves from one character to another, creating a whole play with just his individual self doing that. Would you say that comedy and tragedy are not very far apart?
Yeah, and I would say that humor, it's a great lubricant to approach the tragedy of life. I've always made it a point in my work not to make it so heavy and so, because people don't come to a performance or to a reading, you know, to be bombarded with gloom and darkness. Even though, you know, that a lot of times, you know, in a lot of our experiences, that tends to permeate and tends to be a constant. But, you know, I've struggled over the years to try to be balanced. And I've always said I do a lot of work with young people. And young people, especially in poor neighborhoods, when you know, put forth a challenge of doing an improvisation or writing a piece, they tend to immediately go for the dark and gloomy aspects of their lives. And I always say, well, that's fine and dandy. You know, that is fine because that's part of the reality, and a lot of the times that's what surrounds us. I said, but, you know, one of the questions that I always pose is, does your mama love you? And they look at me and they say, you know, what do you mean? I say, I mean just that. Does your mama love you? And they say, yes. I say, well, why don't we write a poem about that? You know, why don't we try to look at the tenderness, at the soft, you know, happy moments, which we manage to have, which we, you know, through all of our struggles and tribulations, you know, we manage to break bread. We manage to have birthday parties. We manage to have loud, you know, uncontrollable laughter. And a lot of times we seem impotent, you know, to bring that forth, you know, in our work. And I think it's important to remind ourselves that we have as much right to sing to ourselves as anybody else, and that the pain and suffering that tends to be common can also be accompanied by a little bit of humor and laughter.
Kike Aviles, I'm Grace Cavalieri, and he is telling us how he changes lives. What is your schedule? How do you meet with these young people? I know your organization is Soli Soul, and we told people that if they look that up, if they Google it, S-O-L-Y-S-O-U-L, they will find out more about it. What do you actually do, meet with groups?
Yeah, we have an ongoing open laboratory for young people who are serious about being artists for the rest of their lives. And we decided 6 years ago that it made no sense to have these age restrictions with the term young or youth. So we have 15-year-olds working along with 25, 26-year-olds. The only condition is that you have to bring in your material, and it's a process-oriented kind of work. You bring your stuff. It is criticized by your peers. Sometimes we have master classes with established writers. Sometimes we have workshops. We perform a lot. We go out and share our work with audiences. We have a quarterly publication. It's called Divided City. And the young people are encouraged to read, to go and listen to other poets and other artists, to watch performances. We provide funds for those activities. We fight for artists to be paid for what they do. So sometimes when we are hired to go and do performances, that we split some of the money with the artists, and the organization keeps a certain percentage. We buy books. We have a small library.
Is it growing? Do you think it's gaining momentum?
Oh yeah, we've been doing it for 6 years, and we have a cadre of about 20 folks that go in and out of the process. We're actually looking for new blood. We meet on Wednesdays from 7 to 9. And anyone that's interested should get in touch with us. And the only condition is that you must have something to say about the human condition. You know, our work is very socially conscious. We don't believe in art for art's sake. We believe that art can contribute to changing society, to influence the way people think and see things. And we encourage people not to be lazy and to really, you know, explore the different aspects of being an artist.
Thank you for what you do. Let's hear more.
All right, this one is it's called Poetry is for Suckers, because a lot of times we get put down and people say, oh, you know, what a nice hobby you have. Oh. But, you know, we keep insisting that art is art and that is a profession. So this one's called Poetry is for Suckers. The signs are clear. This is not a good profession. People say there's something insane in thinking of writing as medicine, a painkiller. Poetry, they say, does not heal wounds. You don't hear of poetry-induced ceasefires or free poetry trade agreements. You're in the wrong field, they say. You should teach, get a degree, write your verses on the side, make it a hobby. Concentrate on attending high-level meetings. Help move the cause in the right directions. Results must be tangible, clear, precise, effective. Not an abstract image on a page trying to paint a picture of tenderness and colors. Give up the pen, they say. Get yourself a weekly calendar. Get a diploma. Use your brains wisely. Demand a good salary. Be demanding. Show your skills. Buy some new shoes. The tie will follow. Be practical. You could read poems on weekends, write on holidays, when snowstorms shut downtown down. Really, they say, you got potential. Stop drinking. Give up your drug habits. Save some money. Buy a house. Be successful. Throw some good parties. Tell some good stories. Tell your friends that in your idealistic days, you used to be a poet.
Kike Aviles, what is the dangerous border game?
The Dangerous Border Game was a collaborative project that we did with Guillermo Gomez Peña, who is perhaps one of the most well-known performance artists in the United States. He's a Mexican writer, performer, MacArthur Fellow, and he's the type of person that that likes to push boundaries in terms of performance and the approaches to performance. So we did a couple of projects with him, along with Sylvana Stroh and B. Stanley and Michelle Parker. So, you know, a lot of D.C. talent working with this crazy Mexican, doing all kinds of crazy
things.
Where
did you do it?
We did it. It was part of a Washington Performance Arts Society program, and it was done at Gala Hispanic Theater.
Right. And is that still in existence?
Gala Hispanic Theater, yes.
Oh,
actually,
good.
Gala Hispanic Theater just opened their brand new theater in the Columbia Heights neighborhood.
Because they've been around. They were there at the beginning.
They've been around for more than 30 years.
And you were also with the New Yorican.
Yes, we did
poets.
Also, and that was also Washington
in
Performance.
New York, yeah.
Yeah.
And you received the Mayor's Award for Excellence in the Arts. That has to feel good.
Actually, I was an emerging artist. That's back when I was young.
Meant you were young, right? But you were singled out as the one, 1991.
Yes.
And I think that gives you reason. You know, awards really matter because they give you that little bit of fuel that just might be needed at that moment.
Yeah, and it's good for the ego.
Well, let's say. And so is our poetry,
yes,
which we want to hear right now.
Okay. This one is it's called We Died Together, and it's a poem about, you know, just how the silliness of that we get entangled in, you know, just in all this ethnic, you know, racial thinking. So it's called We Died Together. We died together, sometimes empty, surprising, unwanted deaths. We died together, sometimes ceremonial, full of pomp and flowery smelling deaths. We died together, the earth spits you out, gently and full of miracles. We died together, the earth takes you back, she swallows you into her luminous womb, and we feed her confused and gentle labor. We died together. Our language problems disappear. Our fancy alphabet of silly words goes with us, disappears and dies. We died together, never knowing if the spirit or the soul will be distinguishable in heaven by nationality or race. We died together, taking nothing, leaving everything behind, memories, shoes, regrets, never really knowing or wanting to understand that we died together.
Do you ever want to go back and visit El Salvador?
Yes and no. I was just there for Christmas and New Year.
Do you still have family?
Very little, very few. And, you know, we've been part of that Salvadoran diaspora, if you will. You know, my grandmother, who's actually the one that raised me when my mother left, I was 4 years old when my mom came here. So she's been here for over 30 years.
And that's a typical story, isn't
yes,
it? Is it not?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, mothers leaving and leaving their children with relatives. And then we came one by one. And then when the war broke out in the 80s, most of the family had to leave the country. And that's how come there's thousands and thousands and thousands of Salvadorians in the Washington metropolitan area.
More than any other community?
Yes. This is the only part of the country where the majority of the Latino population is Salvadorian. And people ask the $1 million question, why Washington, D.C.? Why didn't you guys settle in parts that were closer to the border? And we don't know what the answer to that is. And it's ironic because it was Washington with, you know, the decisions that were made in Congress and especially Ronald Reagan, because that's when most of the funding for the war, you know, went down to El Salvador. It's ironic that a lot of the decisions about, you know, our country and its future were made here. And then now they're stuck
and
with
now
us.
Now you're here. I'm very glad you're here. Kike Aviles, he's added so much to the world, to the city, to the community, to the world of letters, because you know what? He's not afraid. Here he goes.
Okay. Persona non grata. Lady with the apron for good cleaning. Woman with the rosary to pray for luck, favors, smiles. Persona non grata. Woman who rocks Billy to sleep. Man that fixes the roof and knows how to speak English. Your daughter's husband. Your son's boyfriend. Persona non grata. People who swim across the river still dreaming. Lady holding a child tightly while the migration handcuff makes the clicking closing noise. Persona non grata. People who do not look or sound like Iowa. Wetbacks. People without towels. Wetbacks. Persona non grata. Woman with the kiss that freed my spirit. Kiss without documents and legality. Young man that makes a good martini but carries that face of possible trouble. Persona non grata. Bilingual dreamers. Poets with accents. Painters of fruits and flowers. City builders. Polycultural priests with curly hair. History makers. Jazz musicians. Bilingual dreamers. Bilingual dreamers. Bilingual dreamers.
Do you like to work with music?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. And lately I've been doing more of that. Been working with a percussionist and with a guitar player. And I have this one, and it's for anyone that's an immigrant or has had to deal with what used to be called the INS. This is a poem that came from spending a whole day at the INS. So it's called They Didn't Know at Immigration. They didn't know at immigration. They had been infiltrated by an aspiring poet that I was checking them out, jotting everything down in my head, turning their requests for two pictures into chaotic thoughts, shaping them into words, going back to my seat, accepting this whole thing as part of me, my life. They gotta have pictures of you. Green cards become obsolete after many years of legally residing, expiring at issuance, they call them, and they have to be replaced. So you need pictures, special ones. They won't take profiles or front face shots. They require a 3/4 facial turn. The right ear has to show. You shouldn't be wearing a hat or any worries on your face. Gotta look your best for the Justice Department of the United States. They didn't know at immigration that I was checking everybody out with their turbans and their Asian eyes and their Hispanic heritage and their Vietnamese sandals and the I Love Santo Domingo t-shirts, and me sitting there with my pissy face reading the sports section, killing time, hating and loving the whole thing. And after everything, the fingerprints and the Xeroxing of my driver's license and the $70 and the extra $10 for the pictures, I asked the lady behind the window if I could travel now, leave the country. And she said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going home. And she said, where's your passport? And I said, I didn't bring it. And she said, come back tomorrow. And with a sense of desperation, I asked, do I have to go through the same process all over again? And she said, no. And she gave me a piece of paper and said, just bring this back with you tomorrow with your passport. And I smiled, and I left, feeling somewhat poetic, and of course, feeling a lot better about my migratory status.
The thing about you, when you say hate and loving at the same time, that is very significant, because there really isn't any poison in your poetry. There's no poison in your pen. You call it like it is. You're very objective. You point it out. But there is a lot of love mixed up with it. You see everything with a third eye.
Yeah, there, you know, I mean, one of the things is that, I mean, I have to admit, I grew up as a very angry young man, very rebellious. I was a punk rocker when I was in high school, so I had this attitude of to heck with everything, you know, wore combat boots and torn jeans and oversized coats and stuff. And my mom, you know, was so ashamed because she thought I looked like a lunatic, which I did. But I was trying to make a point, and some of my initial poetry was full of venom and full of just that youthful anger, you know, and I had to realize that screaming at your audiences and kind of shoving propaganda down people's throat is not the way to go. That if you want to be an effective artist, if you really want to relay a message in an artistic manner, that one has to go for the heart and not for the throat. And that there is that human willingness to accept a message if it's delivered with care, with tact. Audiences are not stupid. You know, they don't need to be told what to think. If you paint the picture and you paint it right, the rest, you know, the politics, you know, your social agenda, that will follow.
The heart, not the throat. Let's hear more.
We're right here in Capitol Hill, so I wrote this letter to Congress. And it's called Congress. I've got this agonizing feeling of wanting to talk, to let it out, to scream out loud. I have a part of me that's getting gloomy, unretractably dark. I want to talk about this place we call home. I want to be able to want to love. I want the ambulance sirens to take a break. I want life to prevail. I want to write a speech to Congress. Dear senators of the end of the last few years of the world, representatives of the snowy regions, Anglo-Saxon body with a few exceptions, the capital of the world is limping. Here, the funeral parlor business is booming. There are bullets crowding the lives of our times. I must tell you, there's an air of despair beyond the eyes of your tourists. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee, elected officials with the power to mess with life, I have this agonizing feeling of wanting to talk, to let it out, to scream out loud. I want you to know that despite the reports, we still manage to bake bread and plant flowers, that we still teach each other the real meaning of smiling.
that we still dream of the day that you let us decide for ourselves the shape and color of our days. I want you to know that it's not enough for you to look serious, to put on that political uniform, to give those comments to the press saying that you care, because we know that you're thinking about elections. Ladies and gentlemen, our children are being born in the middle of your bickering and nagging. I urge you to listen, to pay attention to those truths that are flying in the air. Stop running around in circles, pointing fingers, finding blame in every corner. Admit that something has gone wrong, that your decisions are not necessarily the answer. Ladies and gentlemen, I urge you to listen. Let us decide for ourselves the shape and color of our days. Listen, I am not the only one with this agonizing feeling of wanting to talk, to let it out, to scream out loud, to say a few things about this place we have learned to call home.
Kiki Aviles.
No tengo mariposa. I ain't got no butterfly to call a pet, a partner, a friend. I ain't got no tender mother, no milk and honey, no lullaby. I ain't got no pink pajamas, no funky leather shoes. I ain't got no butterfly to torture or to slap. I ain't got no record player, no songs to call my own. I ain't got no intellectual wine and dining, no scholarly debate. I ain't got no butterfly to make a statement to the press. I ain't got no strong defense, no sexy excuse, no explanation, no alibi. I ain't got no butterfly to speak in my defense to the jury and the judge. I ain't got no dog that catches frisbees, no magnolias, roses, daffodils. I ain't got no butterfly to explain the pain and sorrow of my days. I ain't got no loving skills, no tools, provisions, ammunition to shoot back. I ain't got no butterfly to give me water, to hold my hand. I ain't got no squirrels at my window, no bilingual cucarachas preaching at my door. I ain't got no butterfly to bring no color and no beauty to my days. I ain't got no soothing poems, no literary fragments that sing of love. No te miento, I ain't lying. No tengo mariposa, I ain't got no butterfly.
Kiki Aviles. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. The Witter Binner series is brought to you by the Humanities Council of Washington, D.C., the National Endowment for the Arts, because a great nation deserves great art, and the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry. You can hear this series on www.loc.gov/poetry. We wish to thank the Motion Picture, Broadcasting, and Recorded Sound Division of the Library of Congress. Our engineer is Bill Haley. I'm Grace Cavalieri.